Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Doing good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. So there's a lot of conspiracies out there. Hollow Earth, there's Flat Earth, there's JFK. There's a ton. This is one that I'd actually never heard of before. And this is the Titanic switcheroo. I don't
know what. Titanic switcheroo?
What's a better word for it?
Well, I'm sure most people have heard of the Titanic.
Yes.
It's a legendary ship, probably because it sank.
Yeah.
At the time, it was the world's largest luxury liner. As we know later, James Cameron would, well, not very faithful to the story, but he would turn it into a major motion picture, which would become the highest grossing film of all time. At least for now. We'll have to wait and see what Star Wars does here, The Force Awakens.
Well, we can take a selfie of us. Like, you can be standing there holding your arms out, and I'll hold on to you, just like the scene in Titanic.
No.
Okay.
But
I imagine for people who haven't heard of it, by the time Cameron's film came out, they did hear of it. Mm-hmm. Too many people saw that movie. Too many people recommended it. As we know, these days, there are a lot of memes based around it. So it's a huge story. We probably won't go into the minute details of it.
No.
But to set up the story somewhat, Justin did mention there was a switcheroo. And what it boils down to in that regard is there were several ships planned as part of this luxury fleet from White Star Lines. Mm-hmm. And the first ship was the Olympic, the RMS Olympic. The second ship built alongside of it was the RMS Titanic. And then a third ship, some say it was supposed to be called Gigantic, but White Star Lines ended up naming it Britannic. Now, these ships were to transport people to and from between England and America, essentially. Back in the day, many of these ship lines would ferry these passengers back and forth, and sometimes they would run into financial issues. Well, J.P. Morgan came in and purchased White Star Lines from Bruce Ismay's father, and he kept Bruce Ismay on as president of White Star Line to run it, but he was now financially behind it. It's Ismay who had the idea for these luxury ships,
yeah,
which I'm sure Morgan liked because they could really cater to wealthy individuals.
Yeah, and they're going to be traveling between Europe and America. And at this point, there wasn't too many luxury ships that were of, I guess, this fine of caliber. So they could charge a lot for tickets.
Yeah, I think they said it was, for first class cabins, it was $4,300 one way.
Yeah, which in today's money was over $100,000. It might have been up to $200,000.
This may have well been a trip to space.
So this is pricey.
These ships were, you could say, dreamt up in 1907. And in 1908, that's when the authorization was given to start building.
Yep.
And these ships were built in Ireland, in Belfast.
Yeah.
And they were known for their shipbuilding. They describe it as a city effort, a citywide effort.
Well, if you didn't work on the docks, I mean, it was like the small town in Kansas. Everybody works at the factory. So in Belfast, it was kind of, if you didn't work on the docks, you probably weren't working.
These ships take about 2 years to build.
It ended up being closer to 4 or 5 years. So,
well, they say the keel for the Titanic was laid on March 31st, 1909, mm-hmm. and it was launched in 1911 in May, the end of May. But yeah, literally from the time the authorization was given to launch, that's 3 years. So they might launch, but where they plan to travel from is Southampton.
Yeah.
And that's in England. The Titanic arrives on April 3rd of 1912.
Yeah.
Its maiden voyage is on April 10th, 1912 at noon. Mm-hmm. What we're saying here is this is going to cater to wealthy individuals mostly, but they will take on all kinds, like every class is represented on this ship.
Yeah.
But according to your class is where you're at in the ship. So the first class passengers are up top. And they have the really nice cabins. I mean, these are luxury suites.
And the best views.
Right. The second class passengers, as they say, would have been first class passengers on many other ships. Mm-hmm. But this isn't a normal ship. So to give you an idea how big this thing is, the Titanic at the time was immense.
But in today's cruise lines, even the smallest cruise ship today is bigger than the Titanic. So it kind of kills some of the magic there.
I didn't look up the small ones, but I did look up the largest cruise ship available, and it's a monster.
So the Titanic is 882 feet long, which is 269 meters. What was the largest cruise ship?
Voyager of the Seas is one of the largest ones, but it's much larger than the Titanic. The length of the Titanic, as you say, was 883 feet. The Voyager of the Seas is 1,021 feet. The number of decks on the Titanic was 9. Well, there are 14 on the Voyager of the Seas. And cruising speed is fairly similar. It's only separated by about 1.2 knots. But the passenger capacity is an additional 511 on the Voyager of the Seas. So in actually constructing the Titanic, about 14,000 workers built the ship. And it's handmade.
Yeah.
They had to design special cranes to build the ship. They had to actually order the cranes, you know?
Yeah.
And I think they were like $30,000.
And they also had gone from iron to steel. So they were using steel plates and steel rivets. But in order to pop the steel rivets in there, they had this big, huge contraption that would shoot the rivets in. Well, around the curvature of the boat, this contraption couldn't function. So the workers would use iron rivets, hand hammered in.
Yeah, they had two different kinds of iron rivets, and then they had steel rivets. And from what I understand, at the time, even though ships have been built for a long time by that point, they still didn't understand just what it would mean to use iron rivets here or steel rivets there, what would be more appropriate in which place. So that may come up later.
Yeah.
So at the time, it was the largest ship in the world. It was the largest movable man-made object.
But it was very similar to the sister ship, the Olympic. So they were almost identical.
The captain was Edward J. Smith, and he had been captain of the Olympic.
Mm-hmm.
The Titanic was going to be his final voyage. And I know some of you may laugh, but it was supposed to be his final voyage, just not his fatal voyage.
Yeah.
Because he only had one more trip to make, and he was going to retire.
He was called the most experienced captain around. Well, because he was almost to retirement. This was going to be his final voyage because he was retiring. So, of course, he was the most experienced guy around.
And he was the highest paid captain in the fleet.
Yeah.
Before we get started on the switch theory here, if you've seen the Titanic movie, and I will confess, I've only seen so many minutes of it. I don't know if it was 5 minutes or...
I saw it.
Yeah. They are not... Like, Cameron probably loves the story of Titanic. I can't question that. I truly believe he loves it. He's done a lot of work underwater. But as far as the film goes, I'm not sure how good his sources were. Or if he just didn't really care in the end. He just wanted the story to work a certain way.
Yeah.
But there are characters that we can't spend time on. We just,
no.
The theory alone to go through and discuss it is going to take too long. But some of these people that were in the film, like William Murdoch and some others, were not, from all accounts, were not bad people.
No.
I would say just remember that's a movie. That's all I can say. But yes, there's a switch that's been suggested that occurred. And it comes down to 1911. Mm-hmm. The Olympic had a collision with the HMS Hawk.
Yeah.
Which was a...
Royal liner.
It was a...
military.
It was a military ship. And while they did try to avoid damage, Captain Smith gave an order that he hoped would help them at least minimize damage, if not try to avoid... Yeah. A collision altogether, but it was inescapable.
Mm-hmm.
And so a collision did happen.
It was pretty bad.
it was a serious collision. It was going to mean that the ship would need to be repaired.
Yeah.
But the Titanic is there as well.
Well, hold on. The Olympic had several mishaps, and they had to do a lot of repairs. And in this collision with the Hawk, insurance wouldn't pay out because the Hawk was a military vessel and the Olympic was a civilian vessel. So when they did the hearing, when they did the whatever, they found in favor of the Hawk because, well, it's a military vessel, so they couldn't have made a mistake. But I'm just wondering, the Hawk was like, what, a third or a half the size of the Olympic? they're the more maneuverable ship. The Olympic has got a beeline out of the bay, so I don't know how the Olympic could have done anything different, but they found in favor of the Hawk, and therefore the insurance or the repairs, you know, for the damage to the Olympic would not be covered by insurance. It would have to be out of pocket from JP Morgan and friends. And then I think the Olympic scrapes the bottom of the, you know, the sea somewhere, and one of its propellers is damaged. Because they can't have the Olympic down for that long, they don't have the time to make a new one. So they went ahead and used one of Titanic's propellers and swapped it over with the Olympic, or put it on the Olympic, because it was faster to get it up and running. So, yeah.
The way I remember it is the propeller shaft is what got damaged.
And the propeller, too. It didn't happen during the Hawk. It happened later on when it scraped. But in order to get it back up and running, they used one of Titanic's propellers. Because that's like a whole crux of the conspiracy. The shaft and the propeller were damaged, and it is alleged that the propeller was swapped due to time constraints. So the Olympic also had another mishap where it apparently scraped the ocean floor or some sort of mass underwater, and it messed up the propeller. And after that, it had to come back to dock. And they say that due to time constraints, they couldn't get a new propeller built. So it's possible that they had swapped one with the Titanic to it. But we'll come back to that detail later. So the overall idea of this is the Olympic has suffered major issues and is kind of like a totaled out car and won't be able to be driven anymore, or the repairs are going to exceed the cost of the ship. So instead of repairing it, or instead of continuing along with the Olympic, they're going to swap the name tags on the Olympic and the Titanic, and then they can have their new Titanic, have that ship as the Olympic, and then they can take the Olympic and have an accident with it or do something with it and collect the insurance, because it's happening to the Titanic now instead of the Olympic. Is there a better way to explain that? It's like you have two cars that are fairly identical, and you've wrecked one of them, and it was your fault, so your insurance isn't going to pay you. So you swap the VIN numbers on the two cars, on the his and hers, and then you take the damaged car is now the new car, and you go and drive it into a brick wall. And then you say, I had an accident, and you collect all the insurance for that car that was already totaled, essentially, or salvaged, or not going to be performing to its utmost ability.
The only issue with that is it sounds like that would be your fault again.
Well, you make it look like an accident. You make it look like something happened where you can collect a claim, you know, file a claim and collect the payout.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So that's the idea behind this conspiracy, is the Olympic is damaged goods, Titanic is fresh. So instead of sending Titanic out on its maiden voyage, they send the Olympic out as Titanic, and they're going to do something to it to make it look like an accident. And it's a foolproof plan because there's other ships around that will be able to rescue the passengers and make it so nobody dies. Everybody's okay, and they get a big insurance check. So that's the switcheroo theory.
Well, it's not just about it being damaged. It's about how many accidents it's had. So the proponents of this theory, some of them are actually stating that it was because they felt, I mean, cursed might be too strong of a word, but that they've had so many troubles with it, it just feels off. Might as well scuttle it somehow and then get your money back, essentially.
Let's go through some of their claims here. We'll just lay them out. They say that the names were changed on Olympic and Titanic. They say that while they were in dock for like a few days, they were able to swap out all the stationery plates or any branding from one ship to another. And that would be plates on lifeboats, vests,
life belts.
Yeah. And they were able to do this with a small paid off team of workers and able to do it over a weekend, I guess.
Well, they also state that aside from these things they need to switch out, that the ships are, well, depending on who you hear, they essentially say they're just alike.
Yeah. But they have subtle differences that you can tell one apart from the other, such as the portholes up in the front. So Titanic has 14, Olympic has 16. Titanic has some windows that are all even and Olympics are uneven, or vice versa. There's subtle superficial differences or aesthetic differences.
But they say that all this can be done in just a matter of days.
Yeah.
And no one's the wiser. Mm-hmm.
And back to the propeller shaft and propeller scraping. They say that when Olympic scrapes the bottom, they have to take one of the propellers off of Titanic or use one of Titanic's propellers and install it on the Olympic. And this is a crucial point to the conspiracy because Olympic was built in dock 400 and Titanic was in 401. So the propellers would be branded with those numbers, and a lot of hardware on the boats are branded, all the parts and everything separate, so they know where to go with them. So this one propeller from Titanic is claimed to have been installed on the Olympic, and it's 401. They say that the propeller swap out should have only taken hours, and then it ended up taking days. You know,
these are just the claims they throw out there. What are some of the other ones? What are some of the top ones that you know of, Aaron?
You can't just change the names on them.
Yeah, yeah, because the names of the ships are actually recessed into the metal. I don't know what you call it, but so they actually...
They're carved
into it. Yeah, carved into it and then painted. So they bolt on big blocky letters over the names. The Olympic, after its multiple accidents that it had, had a slight list to port. And they say when the Titanic left port, it had that same list. So they're saying, well, it wasn't the Titanic, it was the Olympic. Some inconsistencies that I find when I'm reading up on some of these, the theories of how they did the swap. One was that they both had carpets and they were different carpets. So they tore all the carpets out and left the tile. One of them said that the tiles were different. So they had carpet installed in one or the other to cover up the tile to mask the switcheroo. There's claims that there was a coal strike going on. So how did these boats get to leave and go on a cruise? How did the California get to leave Southampton and go to the Americas without any cargo in it? They also point out that when they did their, went out and did all these tests for like a day or two.
They're called sea trials.
Yeah, sea trials. And then the Titanic's only lasted until lunchtime. So hence, they were swapped. So Titanic, the fresh boat, actually had longer trials. And the Olympic that was limping along, which was rebranded as the Titanic. I know this is getting confusing, but they couldn't do the full sea trials because it was damaged. So there's a lot of claims here.
What we're saying, I guess, is with the theory, they were protecting the Olympic that has now been rebranded as the Titanic.
Yes.
So that they could at least get it out there so they could continue with the switch. So mm-hmm. the switch, for it to be successful, it has to sink. It has to be lost at sea so that they can claim the money. So they have to make sure they go easy on it, because once it goes out there, who knows how long it's going to last? Because apparently one of the things that happened in this collision, and this is a major point, so follow along. They say the keel was damaged. Now, the keel is essentially, it's the backbone of the ship.
Yeah, the spine or whatever.
Right. So they say that it was damaged. It was bent. This would be a major issue. One of the reasons why they'd say, oh, well, you can't repair it. They have to find a way to sink it. Perhaps they can do so with it out on the ocean. And then it'll be an accident. So then we can get into the insurance.
Yeah.
They have this conglomeration of insurance companies under Lloyd's of London, and the insurance policy was taken out 2 weeks before the maiden voyage of the so-called Titanic.
Oh, well, it actually says 5 days before.
Well, according to the theory,
yeah.
It was 5 days before. Mm-hmm. But if you look it up, it'll often say 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So we'll just say 5 days to fit the theory.
Yeah.
They insured it for $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
The ship cost $7.5 million. Now, we're using U.S. dollars here.
Yeah.
It was up to the company itself to make up the difference.
Yeah.
To self-insure.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into that more later.
So how do they go about planning the sinking?
The maiden voyage happens on the 10th.
Yeah.
Now, on the 14th is when disaster strikes.
Yeah.
And of course, the official story is that the Titanic hits an iceberg.
Yeah.
And the damage is more severe than they realize, or at least more than most people on the ship realize. Now, according to this theory, the sinking was deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the plan included opening the seacocks.
So what are the seacocks? Are they like windows under the water line?
Yeah, they use them for different purposes, but they can. It's a way to let water in and out of the ship.
Okay.
But in this version, they would just open them all and just flood the ship.
Okay. Well, and the ship sinks very quickly, so that would make sense if they just let the water in.
Right, so they want the ship to sink, and one of the biggest pieces of evidence that the theory has is that the owner, J.P. Morgan, was supposed to be on this ship.
Yes.
He had a very nice cabin reserved for himself, one of the grandest ones, and he canceled his trip.
Right before.
Yeah, so he wasn't going to be on. He said he was ill or something, but he wasn't there. So, because maybe he knew the ship was going down, he didn't want to go down with it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the president of the company, Ismay, is on the ship.
You have two versions of the sinking. One is they just opened up these seacocks, these ports, and just let water in. The second one is they deliberately hit the iceberg and they took that as their opportunity to open up these ports. And they say that how could they have hit this iceberg? It was, you know, a clear night, no rain, no weather. There's no way they could have missed it. They were getting ice warnings from other ships telling them exactly where the iceberg was. So you have dueling sort of ideas there.
So what they're saying, though, is that they planned to sink the ship where other ships were nearby so that they could get everyone off safely.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really want to kill anybody. They just wanted to get rid of the ship, but they had to do it in a way that made it look like an accident. Oh, look, now we need all this help. Come get these people, help us. And they would open up the seacocks and it would flood the ship. The theory states, though, that there was an actual accident here, that they headed out that way to the area they planned to go and scuttle the ship.
Yeah.
But the Titanic really did run into one of the rescue ships.
Oh, so it didn't hit an iceberg at all. It actually hit a ship?
Right. They say that the iceberg story is just a story.
Okay.
And now, because the damage caused by this collision was more than they had planned, it sank more rapidly than they had
anticipated,
and this threw their plans off.
But there isn't a single eyewitness account of a second boat or ship involved in this at all.
Well, no. I mean, they say that the other ship sped away.
After a wreck with the Titanic or the Olympic, whichever. Okay.
Right. It disappears. And then the other ships don't quite cooperate.
Well, but that kind of contradicts one of the theories that they say that how could they have hit the iceberg if most of the passengers didn't even feel the impact? But if they're hitting another boat, they absolutely would have felt and heard that. Okay. You want to start going?
Well, you're going off too crazy. We haven't finished this yet.
All right.
No, so they say that the ships were expecting the ship to come up to them so could unload the passengers.
Yeah.
And then they could scuttle it safely because you don't really want to start too early.
Yeah. You don't want to frighten anyone.
Now, because of the damage with the collision, the other ships aren't being rendezvoused with and they're not responding to the distress signal because they figure the Titanic's supposed to go to them.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Titanic's sending out distress signals and they don't get it because it's not part of the plan.
Or they say that the distress signals were supposed to be red, white, and blue rockets fired, and they only saw white rockets. And somehow, white rockets doesn't mean come save us. Red, white, and blue rockets means come save us. So they didn't pull forward. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some disagreement over the rockets.
Yeah.
Anyway, the ship was too damaged in its original collision with the HMS Hawk.
Yeah.
They just couldn't repair it. So they have to scuttle the ship so they can get their insurance money back. In other words, they can't repair it, so they have to scuttle it. That's the only thing they can do. So they have to pull some shenanigans here.
For a boat beyond repair, it made it pretty far across the Atlantic.
Yeah, that's the crazy part is it made it, 4 days?
It made it most of the way.
Right. And cruising at a good speed. It's pretty surprising that a ship so badly damaged is having no problems.
So let's knock some of the wind out of these sails, huh?
Well, I would like to say before we get started, we have listeners who very much believe in this theory.
Oh, yeah.
And let me say, when I hear from you and you tell me why this is totally believable.
Legit.
I get it. Because you have a very powerful, wealthy man who can make or break a lot of people with a single call or a stroke of a pen and who wants things to go his way. I totally get it. But just challenge yourself and hear us out, because of all the conspiracies we've ever covered, this might be the easiest one to take on because there are too many problems here. Let me start with one thing. When I was first reading up on this case, which was suggested by Ethan, by the way.
Okay.
But when it was first suggested to me, it felt preposterous. But I started reading up on it. And the author, Robin Gardner, he's written 4 books.
About this?
About this. And he says that the keel was damaged. Mm-hmm. That the damage done to the Olympic was much worse than anybody was told.
Yeah.
There's a slight problem with that. And the problem with that is there was a man who had to appraise the ship to determine what the damage was so they could figure out, can we repair this? Do we have to claim insurance on it? What do we do? And this man, his name is Harry Roscoe. He's a consulting naval architect with 25 plus years of experience. He appraised it and found that there was damage, but he said the damage totaled $125,000.
That's it?
That's it. Now, why is that? Well, because the HMS Hawk, unlike what the conspiracy people would have you believe, did not create damage in the spot they say it created damage in. They know this because there are photographs of the ship.
Yeah.
They have these in a museum.
Yeah.
In order for it to damage the keel, the impact had to have been 30 feet lower, and it would have needed to penetrate 45 feet into the ship. Now, remember, the ship is massive.
Yeah.
So you can't have penetration of 8 feet, which was the deepest damage done, and hit the keel. You can't even go 8 feet and bother the keel. Okay, are you following along?
Mm-hmm.
So they come up with all these scenarios and how it would happen. They say there was a ram on this Hawk. And a ram would be something on the lower part of the ship in the water that would hit other ships and damage them, take them down.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. The damage done to the Olympic was $125,000 worth. And the deepest damage was 8 feet. It went from 6.5 inches to 8 feet. That was the
sloth,
the range of damage in depth to the ship. So, yeah, the keel was not damaged. Now, even if it were, that doesn't mean the ship's beyond repair.
No.
Yeah, we can keep going on. But that's that's the first thing I wanted to say was the actual impact and the damage to the keel. The author has to make it up.
Yeah.
Because there's no evidence of it. The photographic evidence does not support it. There's no documented evidence that supports it. Now, Gardner would probably tell you that's because it's a conspiracy and everybody's in on it.
Yep.
But so everybody lied.
But you can't say just because you have too many people in on it, Aaron, it doesn't mean it's not true. Can't say that.
That's a lot of people to wrestle there.
Another point they bring up was the other ship, the California, and the other ships that were around in the area not responding to the Titanic. And the California was the closest ship and wasn't able to respond to the Titanic, or didn't respond to the Titanic because of some confusion in the flares or something like that. But they say that there's no way the California could have left because there was a coal strike going on, and the California left with a bunch of woolly jumpers and blankets and things like that. That's the claim. So it was going to be the rescue boat. The California was owned by another company. So they would have had to have been commissioned by J.P. Morgan or the owners. It was designed to transport cotton. So if it did have cotton on it, it was transporting it. But the claim of it had blankets and woolly jumpers and sweaters, that's just made up. There's nothing that corresponds with this. There was a coal strike going on, so they wouldn't have sent this ship out empty. Well, it was a transport ship. It was transporting things from Europe to America. So that's how they get paid. And the coal strike obviously wasn't hampering a bunch of ships from leaving because they were leaving. And it wasn't just Titanic and California or Olympic. There were a lot of ships that were out and about at this time. So apparently the coal strike isn't really stopping them from sailing. Port numbers? Do we want to cover those?
A lot of components of the ship were stamped / branded with the number 400 or 401. Mm-hmm. And these are yard numbers where they were built.
Yes.
And this is because you mark those parts and then they know what yard to send them to.
Yeah.
And they can just put them on the ship. To be clear, both ships started with the same set of plans.
Yeah.
The plans were actually designed on linen. What happened was, as they were building them, little modifications would take place. You know what? The wheelhouse, I kind of want this one to be rounded, et cetera. You know? So they would make little modifications. They didn't write every little change down. But the ships didn't end up being identical. And one of the reasons they're not perfectly identical is because of these numbers. So since so many components have these numbers, in order to switch a ship, how would you change all that stuff out?
Exactly.
So because you can't send a Titanic ship through a port authority and just say, yeah, this is the Olympic or what have you, or back or forth or whatever, and expect them just to accept it with these differences, one of which is these yard numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, no one's going to notice that. And to this day, Titanic's down in the bottom of the ocean, and many subs have gone down there and visited it.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary recently where you can see where the ship's being damaged by these subs visiting the ship.
Yeah.
They literally will land on a part that's clear, and they'll just break through a little bit. Discrete damage.
And all of these Travel Channel, Discovery Channel, all these expeditions to go visit the Titanic at the bottom of the ocean, not a single one of them has noticed that it wasn't the Titanic? Or are they all in on it too?
There's no reason to protect anyone at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, what does a documentary channel care? And stuff has been brought back.
Mm-hmm.
And every time it has Titanic's numbers on it.
Yeah.
401.
The propeller idea here, that the Olympic had one of Titanic's propellers swapped to it. And so they actually have a picture of 401 on this propeller. And they're like, see, it had that propeller swapped out, and therefore it's, you know, it's the Olympic. But the Olympic was 400, the Titanic was 401. And you're showing me a propeller that has 401 stamped on it. You're not showing me a propeller that has 400 stamped on it, which would prove it was the Olympic. I don't even know how this is proof, why they even point this out.
Oh, I'll explain it to you real quick. If
a
part from the Titanic was put on the Olympic, it would have 401 on it. So the very fact that it's Titanic at the bottom, but it's really Olympic, but it has the Titanic's propeller on it, it should have that number on it. So they're right.
But you have to show me 400.
No. No, they're saying that this propeller was taken.
You've just proven that it's the Titanic.
No, you're missing the point. They got the propeller from the Titanic and put it on the Olympic. So when the Olympic got sunk, it does have the Titanic's number on it.
Again, you're not proving anything until you show me the number 400.
No. Again, do I have to say this 100 times? Listen to me, okay? Let's put it this way. Olympic has A and Titanic has B. They take the B part and put it on the A, okay? It's supposed to have B on it. Do you understand what I'm saying? The only problem with this is, to the rest of the world, they're saying it's supposed to have B on it because it's on B.
Oh, I'm going to drop an anchor on that one and say, no, you have to show me that it has both A and B before I listen to you.
I get what you're saying now. Okay, that makes more sense. You're saying, fine, that should have 401 on it, but then all the other propellers should have 400.
Exactly.
But they don't. They have 401.
They all have 401.
In fact, they can't find anything with 400 on it, can they?
No, they can't. This is like a VIN number for on a car, but it's the yard number, and all of them say 401 Titanic.
And remember, this switch was supposed to happen over a weekend, essentially.
Yeah.
Because they hatched the plan after the two ships were side by side for a week.
Yes.
So when they start thinking of the plan, that's a day or two in, who knows. By the weekend, they're already acting on this.
Yeah. So let's go to the portholes up at the front. Olympic had 16, Titanic has 14. And when you see the Titanic leaving for its maiden voyage, all of a sudden it has 16. So that's the Olympic. It's not the Titanic. Because there's two more holes than what the Titanic should have had.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
I mean, checkmate, man. There's two. You can count them. You can go and count the portholes. There is 16, and the Titanic only had 14. What they don't tell you is actually both ships had 14, and both ships were modified to have 16. They just weren't modified at the same time because the Olympic was built first. So they made the modifications later to add light to certain areas of the ship. But that's totally disregarded in the conspiracy theorist mind. They just look at the portholes and say they're different, and here you have it. So let me repeat that. They both were planned and built with 14, and they both were changed to 16. that's just the way it went. The windows on whatever deck, one were evenly spaced and the other was unevenly spaced. Again, they actually were both built the same way and then changed later. For aesthetic reasons, whatever you want to, you know, say, I don't know. But the portholes is a big deal, so gotta address that.
Well, one thing that really got on my nerves is if you watch the documentary, they keep pointing out, here's this ship sailing off.
Yeah.
But they'll often use the wrong ship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this helps their theory because they can point and say, see?
It's the Olympic. It's not the Titanic.
Right. But it is the Titanic.
Yeah.
Now, if you can, pull up a picture of the Titanic and a picture of the Olympic. They have plenty of pictures side by side on the internet for you to find.
Yeah.
The A deck, which is the first class deck, the forward part of that on the Titanic is enclosed. And on the Olympic, it's open all the way around. I mean, it's open. It's not closed. So when they're pointing this out, oh, this is this ship, they have no idea what they're talking about. They don't even know what ship they're using the ship that fits their theory.
Yeah.
And it fits in with my theory that the people that are promoting these ideas don't understand ships at all.
No, they don't.
They're just coming up with these theories because, well, Morgan's a bad guy. He had to have done this.
Evil, rich, one percenter, and he doesn't care about human life.
Right. Doesn't at all. So they never stop to think, hey, there are all these people pointing out on YouTube and all these forums saying that's the Titanic.
Yeah.
Because it's enclosed.
And funny enough, when the press and media would photograph or film these ships or do a presser package, whatever they called it, half the time they were on the other ship. And they're like, oh, we're doing a promo package for the Olympic. Well, the Olympic was out and about, so the Titanic was sitting in the dock. They would take pictures of the Titanic. So it is a little confusing because they would just take a picture of one and say it was the other. It wasn't malicious. It was just lazy or time constraints.
Right. For the media, the picture of one, whatever.
Yeah.
It's close enough. They're sister ships. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
They don't understand the harm that they do because now the theorists go and say, oh, look at this.
Yeah.
This says it's the Olympic. There are so many differences between the two ships. It's just unbelievable. They say that the ships were identical, but they were only identical conceptually at the beginning.
Yeah.
They used the same plan.
Yeah.
But especially after they launched the Olympic, they would come up with ideas on what to do with Titanic based on what they were seeing and how it was being used and say, oh, you know what? We should add some more cabins here or we should go through some of them. Titanic did have some additional cabins on deck A, the promenade area around the aft staircase. The paintings in the smoke room on the Titanic approach to Plymouth Harbor, and on the Olympic approach to the New World.
Mm-hmm.
So the style of the iron gates for the three elevators on the Titanic were different than on Olympic. The Titanic had 1,004 gross tons more enclosed space than the Olympic.
Mm-hmm.
The porthole arrangement on shelter deck C between the two ships were different. The lounge furniture on both ships had their ships' names on them.
But you could swap those out in a weekend.
Yeah, well. The top of Olympic's breakwater was painted brown and Titanic's was white. So there'd have to be a lot of modifications being made. And my guess is all this work, I mean, plus repairing damage, that's more than just repairing the damage. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be, it's unbelievable how far you would have to go to swap these two ships.
The Olympic's bridge roof was white and the Titanic's was grayish. Titanic was 4 inches longer.
Well, no one would have noticed that.
Not the Port Authority either. There's a lot of controversy over the propellers and having different pitches and not being interchangeable.
Yeah. So when I said earlier that they damaged the propeller, the claim is they took one of the propellers off Titanic and threw it on the Olympic. Well, actually, they probably didn't do that. Probably just put on a new one. They didn't have to use one from Titanic.
The wireless room on the Olympic was on the port side of the officer's deckhouse. On the Titanic, it was amidships.
Oh.
There's so many of these differences that you can find that there's just no way. I mean, you're almost talking about redoing the entire ship.
You might as well, because everything's so branded.
So remember, when we said that they created from scratch, it took, well, basically 3 years, because from the time they gave the go-ahead to the time it was completed was about 3 years. And they're trying to say that all these things were changed. And get this, the really crazy thing is photographs of the Olympic, because it continued on, and in later photographs does not resemble the Titanic at all.
Yeah.
I don't understand what's going on, but it's like they want to say, well, here it is. Here's the Olympic and see how it looks. And here's the Titanic and see how it looks. Well, the photographs of it after this point look completely different. So what did they do? Go and change everything back or change things drastically? Or what did they do?
Well, the Olympic did go on to be a military transport ship. And I'm sure it did have some modifications during that time.
Oh, it did.
You know.
Yeah.
But again, it doesn't look like what they say it's supposed to look like. The final issue that I really took was with the name change and how they bolted on letters onto the outside, and that the original names were underneath these letters. Because somehow, I don't know how you would cover Titanic and Olympic up with letters like that, because a T is not going to cover an O and vice versa. But this is their idea here. But when you're watching their little documentary, and there's multiple documentaries out there that claim the switch, and they contradict each other, just like most conspiracy theories and Bigfooters and everything else out there, is they can't even get the same consistent story. But when you're watching this, it's comical to me, because they're showing video footage, high-def video footage from one of the submarines floating around the Titanic's wreckage. And they're like, okay, you know, you're doing this and you see this, and here's where you can see where the name Olympic is underneath the Titanic. All of a sudden, the video changes from this full widescreen, high-def video to this horrible, crappy CGI framed in spotlight dumb thing. And you know, I'm real sensitive to CGI. I don't like CGI. And all of a sudden, the video changes. It goes over a CGI created boat and focuses in on the name. They've CGI'd the T, and then they CGI like an M later on. And this is their claim, that they changed the name on the side of the boat. This is their evidence, is manufactured CGI. It's not the Discovery Channel's high-def video of the Titanic. In fact, you can barely make the letters out when you watch theirs, because there's so many barnacles and crap on there. But you get the idea. The name change, the only evidence is the conspiracy theorist's own generated CGI. And it looks so bad that if anyone falls for it, then I guess mermaids floated up in Washington and they found giant skeletons and
Megalodon is still around.
Oh, the Megalodon. Yeah. I mean, That's how bad the CGI is. It infuriates me. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, when I saw this, I about fell off the couch screaming at the television. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. All other conspiracies aside, this is the stupidest one I've ever heard, and the easiest one to debunk.
I'd say the major point that debunks this, even worse than the differences on the enclosed A deck or open A deck of the two ships is the insurance question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that you'll have people out there saying, oh, it was insured for more money than it was worth.
Yeah.
The ship cost $7.5 million US at the time to build. Okay. They insured it for $5 million. We know this because someone has that document.
So they lost money.
Well, what happened is they insure it for five. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then they self-insure the rest.
Yeah.
But saying self-insure the rest implies that they insured it for 2.5 on their own end. That's not what happened. In fact, as best I can see, they insured it maybe for up to $500,000.
So 5.5.
If they're lucky, you're right. But that's losing money. Now, remember when they had this independent analysis done after the Olympic was damaged, and there's photographs to support this, that the damage wasn't that bad. It was $125,000 to repair. So the theorists would have you believe that it would make more sense to scuttle a ship that had some minor damage to it than to just repair it.
But we already went over ticket prices. A couple, if this thing was seaworthy enough to make it most of the way, then obviously it wasn't damaged beyond repair. Secondly, if the thing could have just gone a few trips, it would have almost paid for itself with those ticket prices. I mean, it makes more sense to keep it in service than it would be to scuttle it. But that's the whole point, right? Is that they made out like bandits. They, or at least broke even somehow and didn't have to deal with the ship.
But they built these things to make money, not to scuttle them and get the insurance.
Yeah.
That the reason why people think that they made money on the loss of the ship was because the insurance companies paid out over $10 million.
Yeah.
The problem is that wasn't all to
JP Morgan and crew.
It wasn't to the White Star Lines. It was to all kinds of things. People put claims on their lost loved ones.
There was passengers.
On property. Right. There were lost passengers. There was property. There were lots of claims made. So you know, they put together a total of how much had to be paid out on this, and everything was paid within 30 days, which is pretty amazing. But not all of it went to White Star Lines. We know this because, again, it's documented.
But they're just taking that number and saying, well, here
they're
you
just
go.
Taking that total number.
They made double.
It's like, don't look at the fine print. Don't look at the details. Just look at that number. See that big number there? That's what they got. They didn't get that.
Don't pay attention to the bad CGI. This is the real name on the side of the boat.
Another thing about your lettering, by the way, those plates over the carved names, it would cause rusting very quickly, from what I understand.
It just didn't happen. They say it happened, and that's all the more evidence there is an allegation.
The only evidence they have is bad CGI.
Yeah.
They created a CGI segment in a video to convince you it happened. Yet, we've had all kinds of people exploring the wreck.
In high def.
And everything fits with Titanic. Everything. Stuff they've brought up. It all fits with Titanic.
This conspiracy is up a river without a paddle right now.
It's almost like the conspiracy continues well afterwards. Now, the only thing I guess is, because as I was poking around on the internet looking for information on this case, I saw that David Icke, the lizard man, I call him the lizard man because he believes there are lizard people amongst us in the highest offices of the world.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that guy.
Yeah. He had information on this. And so I wonder if...
Lizard man's a Titanic Olympic expert now.
Well, I'm sure.
Okay.
But he knows the truth, so you can't question him.
Yeah.
But I'm saying maybe the people behind this are lizard people, and they're still around, right?
Oh.
What's 103 years and some change, right?
Yeah. I would like to explain how this boat really sank, because
there is people at fault here. There is some mistakes made.
Yeah, there are people at fault, but and this is where, you know, people would say we're going too easy, we're covering for the evil wealthy guy.
No.
No.
No, let's slam him a little bit right now.
Yeah, we can slam him. Again, this is like any other conspiracy we cover. You don't have to make up something.
No.
Generally speaking, people in power abuse that power.
Or make mistakes because they're not an individual. They're a big bloated conglomerate that one hand doesn't speak to another. And they run as inefficiently as anybody else. Remember the rivets, the iron rivets that were used on the curvature of the boat where they couldn't use the steel ones? Well, not only did they use iron rivets that are way weaker than steel rivets, but it was really crappy iron, so it wasn't even high quality. And then you got, you know, stress test. These things are going to not go so well. So when the boat merely glances an iceberg, all these rivets fail. They just happen to hit in that specific spot.
The rivets, you know, like I said before, there were three types used. There were two different iron types and one steel. And as you said, they used certain iron ones in certain places because
they couldn't get the steel
more feasible.
Yeah.
There's something that's developed over time. They've figured this out. It's called brittle fracture.
Mm-hmm.
These things that you think are permanent, like these iron rivets, they're not so permanent because you get them in low temperatures and you apply tensile stress to them, they can undergo brittle fracture. And this is where they just snap. So like under extreme strain, normal rivets can just be pulled out,
mm-hmm.
bent, pulled out, and then broken or whatever.
But they don't
fail. These just snap. These just yeah. completely fail, right? You can see the way some of these things did suffer brittle fracture. It didn't help when it struck the iceberg.
So going back to the differences between the two ships, they wanted to make the stairwell in the Titanic more grand. And in order to do that, they just didn't have enough space inside the ship. So something had to go. And there is bulkheads that go down the ship, and these are, they're flooding compartments. So if the ship is taking on water, you can have, you know, 2 to 4 compartments flood and you're good. You're okay. It's like, I guess you could, you know, think of the firewall in your car, and these have to be above the water line by a certain amount in order to function properly. Well, in this time, hey, she's safe. She's unsinkable. Lower the bulkheads so we can make an aesthetic stairwell. So they lower them. Well, that just adds to the problem now. Huh.
Well, I would say at the time, I believe it was Ismay said it was practically unsinkable.
Yeah.
But people dropped the practically.
Because nothing's unsinkable.
No, and they knew it too. A part of their policy for their officers was that you are our best insurance. Your judgment, it's the way you handle the ship that's going to insure the ship better than we can insure it through insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to be careful with the ship. They need to be diligent. And that's what's going to be the best insurance. So they understood. It's not like they said, do whatever, you know, fall asleep at the wheel. No, they let their officers know this is, you know, expensive hardware.
Yeah.
Take care of it.
Multi-million dollar ship. So
right.
There you go.
Insurance costs money. Think about your car.
Yeah.
You don't just say, will you insure this thing for $50 million for me? And then, now I need that $50 million. No, you're spending money. And the higher the
premium, whatever.
Yeah, the higher the premium, it's going to go up. Yeah. How much you pay. And you don't really want to spend all your money on insurance. So no. There's that fine line of where do we put that number at? Now, in the case of White Star Lines, they're thinking, well, we won't insure it for the full amount because if we do suffer a loss, it'll be less loss. And then for a very wealthy person like J.P. Morgan, it's like, that was too bad, but it's not breaking him.
I can absorb that.
I can absorb it.
Also, you got a captain, Edwards. Is that his name?
His name is Edward Smith.
Edward Smith. This is his last cruise. This is his last voyage. Think about your last days at work. Think about your last day at work. You're cruising. You're sailing. You're not anticipating an incident. You're already, you know, retired 1 foot out the door. So this guy, he leaves the bridge. He goes and goes to sleep. You know, he's not running this boat all night long. He's not so diligent. Also, at the time when they took on the Titanic, they actually pulled some of the officers from the Olympic and replaced the officers on the Titanic with these other officers. Well, it is said that one of the Titanic officers who was quote-unquote let go, he had the binoculars for the crow's nest, the watch nest, the iceberg watcher guy, spotter. He didn't get the binoculars out when he left. He just left them in his locker locked up. Nobody thought to ask, hey, where are these at? We kind of need them. The captain actually diverted his route, I think, up to 30 miles south, trying to avoid the ice, trying to avoid the icebergs that came down. So he did his due diligence to get away from the ice. And they didn't quite understand where the line was of how far down these icebergs could go. And apparently, they could go well within the shipping lane. They just didn't think they went down that far south. But the captain, anticipating this, even went down further south. So they're really not expecting to run into these dangers.
And that's why they're running at 20 to 21 knots. That's nearly full speed for a ship that's damaged.
Yes.
Because I have to throw that in there.
And then you have the ice warnings from the other ships telling them, hey, there's these icebergs, and they're telling them where they're at. And the Titanic does not divert course and does not slow down. Well, one, these ice warnings come in through the, I don't even know what you call it, the weird wire, the it's not even a radio, it's like a Morse code thing. So you got a guy there who's taking in these messages and transcribing them. He's giving the messages up to the captain or the bridge. But his main job, you would think his main job would be, oh, there's an iceberg dead ahead, so yeah, let's warn somebody. But his actual main job is the money-making job, which is delivering messages for the passengers. So it's like when you're on an airplane and you want to call somebody and you have the little phone on the back of the chair. What's the first thing you do? You swipe your credit card and now you're paying a buck a minute to talk to, you know, your significant other and say, I'm up in the air flying 600 miles per hour, whoop-de-doo. That's what this guy's doing, is he's sending messages from the Titanic to other ships who relay it to land so messages get out. And the passengers pay a pretty penny for these messages. That is his priority because that is the moneymaker. And taking in ice warnings all night long is more of a distraction to him. But in all reality, we know how that works. I work in corporate America. I have what I'm told is the priority. Meanwhile, I'm seeing a fire burning down the building, but they're like, yeah, Justin, but we really want you to focus on this. And I keep telling them there's a problem, but they don't listen. Next thing you know, there is a catastrophe. That's just corporate America, and it wasn't much different then. So this guy, he relays the messages. They're not getting to the captain. They're just going to the bridge. Captain's in bed asleep. People up in the crow's nest, whatever, they're not paying attention. They don't have the equipment they need, and they're in a ship that is not designed to take an iceberg strike.
Well, I would say that they were paying attention, but as you said, they don't have the binoculars.
They don't have the right equipment.
They're looking.
Yeah,
it's just that given the conditions, this is late at night. The iceberg, as near as they can tell, was a blackberg. So what it is, it's a normal iceberg. And so the top would be like whitish. Mm-hmm. And then the bottom would be more clear. it'd be different. Mm-hmm. So when it flips, and this is what happens with this iceberg, it flips at some point recently.
Oh, so it's clear underneath.
So it actually takes on the color of everything around it. So it's nighttime.
Yeah.
The way the water is and everything, it's dark. So then it's dark. It just disappears.
Yeah.
So by the time they see it, by the time they notice it, it's too late. Because now they have to call down. Then it has to be called over to the captain. Now the captain has to be alerted. Now the captain has to figure out what's going on. Then he has to figure out a course of action. But by that time, they're already on it.
But my understanding was the captain didn't even get to the bridge by the time they were striking this iceberg. I heard that it was like the first mate or whatever, whoever is the second in command.
Well, I think it's William Murdoch.
Yeah, he actually was like, you know, turn left, go around it, you know, get out, let's try to avoid it. He almost did. But in this situation, all things considered, if he would have known scraping along the side of this boat is going to cause a huge seam to open up because all the rivets are made with crappy metal and my bulkheads are way too short, he would have been better off ramming the iceberg dead ahead, straight on, because the highest bulkhead was the actual forward bulkhead in the ship, and two metal plates coming together at a V point are going to have a lot more structural integrity as opposed to the side of the ship.
Well, that's a theory, and it could be true, but I just think that they didn't have much choice at that point in time.
They made a quick decision.
It's hard to criticize.
Yeah.
This guy that's having to make these decisions last moment.
I know it's kind of in slow motion here, but you know, when you're in your car and an animal runs out in front of your car, you're going to jerk the wheel.
Or you're going to stop.
But you never think, ram it and I'll be better off. You think, avoid it. So that's what they're doing. They're trying to avoid it.
That might be a natural instinct.
Yeah. Here's the perfect storm. Here's the issue. The side of the boat is not nearly as strong, and it's because of design flaws, and the bulkheads are lower where the strike happens. It's just a terrible situation. And Titanic sinks in less than 3 hours after they hit this iceberg.
Well, when it initially hits, they have to try and figure out how much damage was done.
Yeah.
And what to do next. So, of course, there's some controversy over, well, how come they couldn't get everybody out to the lifeboats? Well, there are rules for these ships.
Standards, so policies.
There has to be a certain number of lifeboats to be able to accommodate a certain percentage of the people on board. Because the lifeboats aren't for people to sit around and hang out in for a day or two or for 12 hours. They're meant to ferry people to safety. You know what I'm saying? So when they finally start realizing that this is catastrophic event, this is not good, they do start getting people out to the lifeboats.
Well, because they don't want to worry people at first. They don't know how bad the damage is. They don't know that the ship's sinking at the initial strike.
Well, not everyone realizes it, but there's an order put out, women and children. So they start trying to put women and children on these boats. So these men are having to say goodbye to their families and say, I'll see you in New York. And in the chaos, of course, it seems as though the third class people aren't exactly shown where the lifeboats are.
Yeah.
They're sort of kept down where they're at.
And they say women and children first, but it's like they're putting half full boats out. They're just throwing some women and children on one and that one's done.
I think I know why. Let's say there's some people up on the deck. There's some lifeboats. Okay, well, we need the women and children. Send them in, and then they might put a crew member on there to row.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have any more women and children. We'll send this one on.
Yeah.
I think the reason is because they thought they had a ship coming to help.
And they thought
I think it was the Carpathia. Yeah,
and they actually thought that they had enough lifeboats too, which they didn't.
No, what I think is they thought, we'll send those people over and the lifeboats would come back. We'll put more people on them, send those over, and we'll just keep that process going. But what ended up happening was the men that would row these boats would think, I'm away.
Yeah.
I'm going to live. It's called selfishness.
It's called self-preservation.
Yeah, either way. So they don't want to row back. On the other hand, it's probably tiring work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you ever rowed a boat?
Oh, yeah.
I've rowed a boat before. At first you think, oh, this is kind of, oh, no, this sucks. Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, can you imagine trying to do that out on the ocean?
The whole problem with the lack of lifeboats was they wanted a more spectacular upper deck. And I think the quote is, people don't pay to look at lifeboats. People pay to look at the sights. And so it went from like, I think it was like 48 lifeboats down to like 16 or 13. I forgot the actual number, but it was like a third of what they should have had.
No, because they had more than regulations said they had to have.
Yeah, they had enough.
They had four more than they were supposed to have.
Which is insane.
But they had less than they had originally planned.
Uh-huh.
That's what we're talking about here. Yeah. They did originally plan to have more, but would it have made a difference? That's the question.
Exactly. I mean, could they have actually even gotten that many people on 48 lifeboats in time? I think they probably wouldn't have even had time to do that.
Well, the ones that left and didn't come back, which was all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's to say?
Yeah.
This probably isn't good for the conspiracy theory either, but when you have the president of the company, Ismay, on this ship, it's sinking and he's on it.
And along with the captain.
Right. You could say, well, he got away. He got on a lifeboat, but he was put in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they'll say, well, they had plans to do this and that, and they just had a collision with another ship. That's what they say. Morgan wasn't out there. Why would any of the top guys risk themselves?
Yeah.
Best laid plans and all of that.
I guess we blew that one out of the water.
I think we know about Titanic because it sank in the way that it did. And the reason why we have a conspiracy theory is because J.P. Morgan owned the company that had ordered this ship to be built.
Mm-hmm. I cannot wrap my head around it. Every single piece of every point they point out, there is either an explanation or it's just a straight out lie. We didn't go into the coal strike. We didn't go into dock workers. We didn't go into a lot of little eyewitness account things because there's no value to it all. I really didn't find it. So,
yeah, I kind of wish we'd gone into some more detail on people that had been on the Olympic, went over to Titanic. They didn't notice they were on the same ship.
Yeah.
That never occurred to them. And as we said, there are too many differences, too many different rooms. We didn't get into the paint schemes. There's so many different things.
And if they actually changed all these
flooring,
things.
The flooring?
Yeah. It would have taken a lot longer than a weekend to change all these things. You say there's too many people involved. Well, you can't say that. Well, then all the expeditions that have gone down to the bottom of the ocean and seen the Titanic, none of these guys are in on it. All these guys are just explorers funded not by J.P. Morgan. I can't keep going with that. It's ridiculous. And all these other people exploring it can't be in on it. That ship sailed for me.
Yeah. I mean, in a nutshell, you can't say that the keel was damaged. There's no evidence for it. That's made up by Gardner. He made it up. His first book that he wrote with a man whose name was Vandervat. Mm-hmm. And towards the end of that book, Vandervat actually says that the theory is no good. It's no good. Didn't write any more books with Gardner. Now, Gardner wrote three more books, which were pretty similar.
Because people buy them.
Yeah, he's making money off this. He knows that people will buy it because they don't trust people with money or people with power. I'm not suggesting that you should, because as far as I know, Morgan was all too happy to fire people in the interest of saving money after this disaster.
Yeah. There's a lot of fallout that happened after
this. There's a lot of negative fallout, and Morgan is no saint, and you don't have to like him. I would say don't look foolish by buying into a theory that has way too many holes in it. It can't float. It can't. The theory is awful.
Does it have 16 or 14 holes in it?
Yeah. That's great. But yeah, along the way, they say that the keel was bent. Then they start swapping the ships as they're saying which one is which to try and trick you, I suppose. The differences are right there in front of you if you would just pay attention.
Yeah.
So fire up those YouTube videos, bring up the images online. It'll be apparent to you. There are people out there that have highlighted them in different colors, so you know what you're looking for. They'll say, you know, like yellow's deck A or, you know, blue's deck B, and you can see the differences with your own naked eyes.
Yeah.
And again, as we've said, it's kind of like the moon landings where people say, oh, we didn't go to the moon either. We've done flyovers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've surveyed the entire moon. You can see all that crap still down there because it hasn't gone anywhere.
It's like the flat earth conspiracy, Aaron. Just go outside and look around. It looks flat to me. That's all the evidence they need.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.